Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. We'll begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, 13th Congressional District, Ammons to launch bid for Davis's seat. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Urbana. State Representative Carol Ammons is expected to announce today that she's running for the Democratic nomination for Congress in Illinois' 13th District. The Urbana Democrat is scheduled to speak at a noon hour rally that is part of the Illinois Women March on Springfield. An aide to Ammons, who asked not to be identified, said only that the two-term state representative would make an announcement regarding the congressional race, quote-unquote. But in an email to campaign supporters, Ammons wrote Monday, "Please log on to my Facebook page tomorrow at 12:15 p.m. for an exciting announcement. I will be speaking at the Illinois Women March on Springfield rally. After my announcement, I will need you to take action." On Twitter, she wrote, "I'll be making an exciting announcement at the handle IL Women March tomorrow." Dr. David Gill of Bloomington, who has run in the district in the past, already has said that he is a candidate and has established a campaign committee with the Federal Election Commission. A number of other Democrats are said to be considering the 2018 race as well. Ammons said earlier this year that she was quote-unquote open to considering a run for Congress in the 13th District, now represented by Republican Rodney Davis of Taylorville. "I'm always looking for and exploring opportunities to serve the people of Illinois better," Ammons said in February. "I'm open to considering any position, whether in Springfield or D.C., that allows me to provide public service that reflects the desires and views of constituents and provides advocacy to our working families in Illinois." And in recent weeks, she has openly criticized Davis on Twitter and Facebook, hitting him for failing to hold town hall meetings and for his support of a Republican-backed health care bill to replace the Affordable Care Act. Ammons has served on the Champaign County Board and the Urbana City Council, but has never run in a district outside Champaign-Urbana. She ran unopposed for state representative last year and in 2014 defeated Republican Kristen Williamson 61% to 39%. That same year, Democrat Ann Callis defeated Davis in the congressional vote in Champaign County 53% to 47%. But he easily won most of the rest of the Republican district 59% to 43%. Davis hasn't announced whether he will run again in 2018, but his campaign fund gained more than $328,000 in the last quarter and had $579,804 on hand on March 31st. The next headline reads, State Budget Crisis, Courage Connection on the Brink of Closing. Emergency Fund Drive launched. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. Courage Connection, a Champaign social service agency that helps victims of domestic violence and the homeless, says it's on the brink of closing over a budget crisis. "And this definitely, isn't a budget crisis the agency caused itself," said Executive Director Isaac, I-S-A-K, Griffiths, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H-S. "To be clear, the reason we're in this situation is because of the state," she said. The agency is appealing to the community with an emergency fund drive to keep its doors open and help flowing to 60 people in residential programs and some 20 to 50 more people in other programs. Griffiths said, "Courage Connection's budget crisis has been brewing due to a loss of federal and state money, but mostly over non-payment of state funds for services provided under contract. We signed our contract with the state in good faith, but in order to provide those services, we have to continue paying bills for operation, including payroll and unemployment taxes to the state, even though the state is not paying the agency to provide those services," she said. "The state requires agencies to spend the grant money under contract, then apply for reimbursement," Griffiths said. "So Courage Connection has spent more than $250,000 for which it is still waiting on reimbursement. By June 30th, the agency will be waiting on $350,000 from the state," she said. Plus, she said the agency unexpectedly lost $100,000 in federal money last year as the Department of Housing and Urban Development shifted priorities away from transitional housing. More federal funding cuts are expected for this year. As the budget situation has worsened over the past 2 years, Courage Connection has reduced spending, cut staff, and implemented a hiring freeze, and its managers have taken furloughs, Griffiths said. "We're definitely in crisis mode," she said. She and the staff have tried to be optimistic, Griffiths said, but optimism and efficiency are no longer enough. For now, the agency is living paycheck to paycheck. It's received a $100,000 advance from Busey Bank, and we know we're going to be able to make payroll this week, Griffiths said. Courage Connection provides a domestic violence shelter, transitional housing for single women and women with children, and several other support services and programs. Before entering transitional housing with Courage Connection, 55% of those served were staying temporarily with friends or family, and 18% were staying in places unintended for habitation, the agency said. After staying in transitional housing, 86% went into permanent housing, and 88% had new or increased income. The agency is asking the public to consider making a donation online at courageconnection.org. Other ways to get involved are to contact legislators and the governor to urge them to resolve the budget impasse, rally friends and other organizations to collect donations, and host third-party fundraising events, the agency suggested. The next headline reads, Illinois Education, Rahner to hold live online chat. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Springfield. Governor Bruce Rahner said he wants the state's children to let him know their thoughts on education. In a news release, the governor asked students to post questions about education to his Facebook page, either now or during a live Facebook chat Thursday morning. The governor said he enjoys visiting schools in Illinois, but the size of the state makes it nearly impossible to get to all of them. So he said he thought the Facebook Live event would be a good way to, quote-unquote, connect with every single student at once. Third graders from Riverton Elementary School will join him for the event at his Springfield office. The next headline reads, United Airlines flap. Officer. Passenger was abusive, injured himself. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. The physician who was dragged off a United Airlines flight in Chicago this month was verbally and physically abusive and flailing his arms before he lost his balance and struck his mouth on an armrest, according to the aviation officer who pulled the man out of his seat. The Chicago Department of Aviation on Monday released the officer's report of the incident in response to a Freedom of Information Act request by the Associated Press. The report reveals for the first time the officer's version of what happened aboard the plane at O'Hare International Airport, on April 9th. The incident was videotaped by other passengers and widely shared online. In the report, the officer, James Long, said he boarded the United Express flight after being called in response to a disturbance involving two people refusing to leave the aircraft. United has said four passengers had been ordered off the airplane to make room for four employees to fly to Louisville, Kentucky. Long said he approached Dr. David Dow, D-A-O, to ask the 69-year-old physician to get off the plane. Long said Dow refused and folded his arms tightly. Long said he reached out to hold Dow and was able to pull him away from his window seat on the aircraft and move toward the aisle. The next headline reads, Therapeutic Tank, Floating an Idea. Doctor's Sensory Deprivation Pod promises pain relief and tranquility. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. Are you stressed, feeling aches and pains, or maybe you're just experiencing a bit of sensory overload from all the noise and gadgets in your world? The way Dr. David Fletcher sees it, soothing tranquility can be found inside a sleek, water and Epsom salt-filled tank. To feel better, just get in for an hour and float. The owner and medical director of SafeWorks Illinois, Fletcher launched his latest venture, 217 Float, this week in partnership with Rod Sickler, the owner of Rod Sickler Salon and Spa at Sickler's Salon in Champaign. The float tank, or pod as it's called, is in a spa setting with its own entrance. Inside the pod is body temperature water and about 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt. The sensory deprivation effect is aided by a cover over the top, which isn't airtight. The person inside can float in darkness or switch on different colored lights and choose silence or calming music. I used to float when I was at Berkeley, Fletcher said. I wanted one of these for 30 years. He recalled using much earlier versions of float tanks that felt like being in a coffin. The technology has come a long way. When he floats now, it's like being back in the womb. That's the best thing I can say it's like, he said. According to research, Fletcher said flotation therapy has a significant impact on mood enhancement, possibly because it boosts levels of dopamine and endorphins through the deep meditative state achieved. Research shows that meditating causes activity in parts of the brain associated with attention and decreases activity in the amygdala, which is responsible for a flight or fight response, he said. The amygdala, basically shuts off, turning down anxiety in the brain when you float. The more you float, the better you get at achieving this state. He also said studies have found it can help relieve chronic pain and post-traumatic stress disorder. Sickler said for him, floating in the pod is like floating in space, and he has found it's helped him with his Tourette syndrome. It shut out all of the stimulus and made me relax, he said. Plus, he said, Me being an artist, I found it opens up my creative process. Champagne's new float pod is already pre-booked for about its first 6 dozen appointments, its owners said. A first-time float is being offered for $59. While the float takes an hour, 217 float manager Michelle Namoff said this is a 90-minute experience in all, including coffee or tea in a private reception area beforehand and a shower after. Another thing to know, she and Fletcher said, is you don't have to be a swimmer to float. The water is only about 12 inches deep, but you'll be fully buoyed inside the pod just as though you were lying on a bed, Namoff said. You can't not float, Sickler said. Fletcher said the Champagne Salon is just the first float pod location with more planned for the area. There seems to be a market. Float Effingham, which opened in January, has been attracting customers from its own community, this area, and Bloomington, said its owner, chiropractor Chris Dreas, D-R-E-A-S. It's gaining a lot of popularity pretty quickly, he said. What he has heard from clients is floating works well for migraine headaches, joint pain, and inflammation, and some have noticed instant changes, he said. These things are going to start popping up everywhere, he predicted. The next headline reads, Chuck Smock, A Life Remembered. Village Chief had a spot in his heart for Alvin. This article is written by Noelle McGee, and is M-C-G-E-E, and is based out of Alvin. In a village the size of Alvin, everybody knows everybody. But residents said in his 2 years as village president, Chuck Smock brought them closer together through his efforts to improve the community. He really motivated the trustees and the citizens of the village to become more involved, said Trustee Thelma Lett, L-E-T-E, adding that he helped launch an outdoor Christmas decorating contest, an Easter egg hunt, and a fun day fundraiser for new playground equipment. He definitely had a spot in his heart for the village, Trustee Scott Harper said. He was always trying to bring it to life. Mr. Smock died unexpectedly Friday evening at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. He was 55 and in the middle of his first full term as president. When the board meets today, Lett, L-E-T-E, and the other newly elected trustees, Rebecca Kinnett, K-I-N-N-E-T-T, and Michael Cassidy, will be sworn in and the board will elect pro-term officers. Then the pro-term president will take nominations for an interim president from the board. We'll see if any of the current trustees are interested, Lett said. If not, we'll see if there's a qualified member in the village. Jean Lett, Thelma's mother-in-law, was Mr. Smock's predecessor. She held the office for more than 20 years before deciding it was time to retire. We couldn't get anyone to run, recalled Jean Lett, now 83, who ended up running for her unexpired term. Then I said, come on, Chuck, do me a favor, and he did, said Lett, godmother to Mr. Smock's wife, Tara. He was a good guy, and everyone liked him. Don Weingartner, the village treasurer and Mr. Smock's sister-in-law, said that's evident by the number of people who have expressed their condolences and have come out to support her sister and the couple's 2 children. Everyone he met, he touched their lives, Weingartner said, of his willingness to help others. As president, he was very dedicated and hands-on, Cropper said, adding he developed a road improvement plan and was working on buying new playground equipment for the park. We'll try to move forward and follow through with some of the plans he already had in place, Thelma Lett said. The next headline reads, Money Talks in Big Ten. During a 45-minute presentation Monday to the U of I's Senate Executive Committee, Athletic Director Josh Whitman covered a football field's worth of ground. But this being Illinois, budget talk was front and center. In fiscal year 2016, he said his department generated $91.6 million in revenue, the Big Ten average, $113 million, while spending $97.8 million, average $109 million. Here's more of what the NG's Marcus Jackson heard at the event. On the deficit, you see 20,000 empty seats in our football stadium and 5,000 empty seats in the basketball arena. That represents ticket revenue, concessions, parking, private donations, merchandise. There's probably $10 to $15 million in revenue per year, and we're leaving on the table by not having the success that we need in those two priority sports. And on the state. The only program that could even claim to compete with us in our state is Northwestern, and despite their statements to the contrary, I would suggest that they haven't quite capitalized on being Chicago's Big Ten team. And now let's take a quick look at our week forecast provided to us by Greg Soulge, S-O-U-L-J-E, on the weather front. Today, a high of 78, mostly sunny, southeast to south wind increasing to 10 to 16 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, increasing clouds. Wednesday, a high of 75, a low of 58. Mostly cloudy with a couple of showers and thunderstorms and spots before noon and late. 50% chance of rain. Thursday, high of 63, low of 51. Variable cloudiness and cooler, a shower and spots before noon. Friday, a high of 69, a low of 49, mostly cloudy and rainy, late. And Saturday, the high will be 75, the low will be 55 degrees, cloudy and breezy with periods of rain and thunderstorms, heavy rainfall and strong or severe thunderstorms possible late. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of editor Jim Rosso. That's R-O-S-S-O-W. Congratulations to Lila Jean Eichelberger, that's E-I-C-H-E-L-B-E-R-G-E-R, 4-H House, Lauren Tate of Sigma Phi Epsilon, Stephen Sample from Beta Theta Pi, and Ralph Vaughn from Omega Psi Phi, who make up the fourth class of the U of I's Fraternity and Sorority Hall of Fame. Eichelberger and Tate, long associated with U of I Athletics, will attend Saturday's 3 p.m. ceremony at the Illini Union, whereas Sample and Vaughn, an accomplished engineer and architect respectively, will be honored posthumously. Happy birthday to CU mainstay Ted Beach, who turns 88 Wednesday, as pointed out in Mike Pearson's popular Illini Legends, Lists, and Lore that is included in Sunday's News Gazette. Since he turned 72, the Champaign High and U of I grad and scratch golfer has been able to shoot his age each year except one. "When you're 88, it's not too hard," said Beach, who has yet to tee off in 2017 but expects to soon, especially when you're hitting from the old man tees. Our online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,275,915 page views. The three top stories were: 1, coroner, death at Cranert and apparent suicide; 2, coroner IDs U of I student who apparently set himself on fire at Cranert; and 3, traffic stop leads to drug gun charges. The three top sports stories were: 1, social media buzzing for Illini basketball; 2, reasons why four-star Smith could pick Illinois; 3, Antigua's success as an assistant only overshadowed by trials as a head coach. 3 top videos: 1, 2017 Illinois Marathon; 2, Game of the Week, Totopolis at Tuscola Softball; and 3, Cubby Conversation, April 17, 2017. And the three top photo galleries were: 1, 2017 Illinois Marathon; 2, 2017 Illinois Marathon 5K; and 3, On the Town, April 16, 2017, Champaign Rotary. Now, in area history, in 1917, citing a federal labor report that showed that the cost of living had increased 30% since January 1913, teachers in Champaign's public schools presented a petition, to the school board asking for a $10 per month pay increase. The petition was referred to the Finance Committee. In 1967, the Tuscola School Board voted to comply with a recent court order asking that William Butkovich be reinstated as principal at Tuscola High School. Earlier, the board had attempted to reinstate Butkovich as principal and then transfer him to a fifth-grade teaching position. And in 2002, Roger Ebert watched as a sign was put into place on Park Street in Champaign, proclaiming the street Honorary Roger Ebert Boulevard at the opening of the 4th annual Roger Ebert Overlooked Film Festival at the Virginia Theater. There also was a reception at the University of Illinois President's Home, hosted by President James Stuckel. And today's highlight in international history: on April 25, 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway opened to shipping. And now, Marcus Jackson's weekly Q&A with a mover and shaker, MJ's Minute with Howard Milton. When he arrived at Illinois in 2001 as an assistant athletic director for event management, Howard Milton figured he'd be here a year or two and then head back to his native Kansas. But 16 years later, Milton is still here, now a senior associate athletic director for development. He just couldn't leave. "I think this is a hidden gem, like a miracle on the prairie," the 1995 Kansas graduate said. These days, Milton and his development team have undertaken a bold initiative they're calling the iFund 1K Challenge, where the goal is to sign up 1,000 new iFund donors by July 1st. Milton stopped by the News Gazette last week to talk to our Marcus Jackson about the challenge and the overall optimism permeating through Bielefeld, that's B-I-E-L-F-E-L-D-T. To view the video of their full conversation, visit newsgazette.com. Here's the one question for Howard Milton. What's the best part about doing what you do? Forming the relationships. I love that part of it. I love the stories about how Illinois changed donor X's life and how Illinois has impacted the lives of the donors that we meet. It's just awesome. If you'd like to join Marcus Jackson for a chat in our downtown offices, drop him a note on Twitter. His handle is MarcusJ_NG, or send him an email at mjackson, that's MJACKSON, at newsgazette.com. And now, the next headline reads, "The floor would be like a slip and slide." With the University of Illinois celebrating birthday number 150 this year, we caught up with hundreds of graduates who've gone on to greatness. Every Tuesday and one Sunday a month throughout 2017, managing editor Jeff D'Alessio will tell their tales. Today, in part 24, Gone But Not Forgotten. Every time he's back in town, and his next trip could be just weeks away, Hollywood funny man Nick Offerman, who received a Bachelor of Arts in 93, yearns for some of those fresh-baked baguettes that the late great Nature's Table served across from Krannert on Goodwin Avenue. A half for a quarter or 50 cents for a whole warm with butter, said the former Parks and Recreation star. The rest of their food was incredibly delicious and wholesome, especially the cookies, but their fresh bread allowed us to subsist on literally pennies. And with that, here are a few other oldies but goodies that alums say Campus Town just isn't the same without. 1. Bouncerless bars. No ID, no problem in the early 70s, as Judd Parkin, who received his Bachelor's of Arts in 74, remembers it. Before he'd go on to become a network TV big shot among his titles, VP for movie miniseries for ABC and director of miniseries for NBC, Parkin and friends would flock to Trino's. My fellow theater students and I basically lived there when we weren't in class or rehearsal. That's where everyone went to get hammered, he says. Almost none of the bars carded in those days, so it was pretty easy to get served alcohol just about anywhere, and as theater students, we felt it was our duty to take advantage of this laxity. 2. The World Heritage Museum. The fourth floor of Lincoln Hall is where Tampa Bay Times Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Leonora Lapeter Anton, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 86, could spend hours gazing at exhibitions, then catch up with her mom, Barbara Bohen, B-O-H-E-N, who ran the museum for 15 years. She turned it into a special place with unique finds around every corner, from a spruced-up replica of the Parthenon frieze, F-R-I-E-Z-E, to a real Egyptian mummy, Anton says. I remember she once bought a massive ceramic classical Greek vase at an auction in Switzerland and booked it two seats on the plane under the name Mr. and Mrs. Vase. The World Heritage Museum is long gone and has morphed into the Spurlock Museum in 2002, but it was quite the little museum in its day, tucked away into the Lincoln Hall attic, as it was. 3. The Huff Gym Pool, a forever favorite of Danville-bred NASA astronaut Joe Tanner, who received a Bachelor's of Science in 1973. Men's swimming hasn't been an official sport at the U of I for more than two decades, but when it was, we trained and held meets in the Huff Pool and Huff Gym for Tanner's 3 years on the team. It wasn't a great pool, but we called it home. A few of us enjoyed jumping off the top rail of the viewing stands, much to the chagrin of the coach. Lastly, 4, the original grease pit of campus. As former Illini basketball big man Chris Gandy, who received his Bachelor's of Science in 97, will always remember, the old Illini Orange snack bar, demolished last decade as part of dorm upgrades. If you lived in the six-pack, Gandy said, it was eating out five-star style, or something like that. It had windows that barely opened, you'd leave smelling like fried chicken, and there was so much oil in the air, the floor would be like a slip and slide, he says. It was also the only place you could go and get a grilled cheese and a book at the same time. Bring back the orange, he says. The next headline reads, Champaign School Board. Both new members jump right in. This article is written by Nicole LaFon and is based out of Champaign. On their first night as new Champaign School Board members, Heather Vasquez and Bruce Brown were quickly thrown right into the mix, approving 3 new administrative hires, one of them directly related to the $183.4 million referendum passed in November. Vasquez, Brown, and current member Giannina Baker were elected in uncontested races April 4th and sworn in at the start of Monday's meeting, marking the beginning of 4-year terms. Vasquez and Brown replaced Jonathan Westfield and Len Stuckey, who didn't run for re-election. The pair called the first meeting interesting and eye-opening as they reviewed curriculum reports, voted on human resources changes, and learned how to play coding games from Kenwood Elementary students as part of a report on the computational learning program at their school. It's really reassuring to see the level of work that goes into planning a curriculum, changing a curriculum, and the public opportunity for comment and editing. This really demonstrates the board's work and what I hope will continue to be a transparent school board. It was reassuring to see, Vasquez said. Said Brown, it was interesting to see the multifaceted approach with everything the school board needs to look at and assess. One of their first votes as new members included promoting Michelle Johnson from her current role as a staff member in the district business office to director of accounting services. When the referendum passed in November, the school board asked the administration to begin reviewing what personnel changes may need to occur in order for the district to successfully complete renovation projects at 6 Champaign schools. It was determined there was a need for an additional supervisory role in the business office, said Human Resources Director Ken Kleber, K-L-E-B-E-R. Johnson, who joined Unit 4 in 1996 to work in the Accounts Receivable Department, has been an administrative assistant for financial services and operations since 2004. Following the unanimous approval of her new job title, she'll step into her new role today. Also, the board approved the appointment of Viodelda Judkins, J-U-D-K-A-N-S, as Director of English as a Second Language and Bilingual Education. Since beginning her education career in 1987, Judkins has served as an elementary, English, and bilingual teacher. She's been working in administrative roles since 2009 and comes to Unit 4 from the Kankakee District, where she served as Director of ESL and Migrant Education and a middle school dual language teacher. Sarah McCusker, was approved as the district's Director of Data, Assessment, and Digital Learning. Since 1992, McCusker has served in several administrative and reading teacher roles at 8 school districts. She was a consultant to the Illinois State Board of Education from 2007 to 2014 and has worked at Decatur Public Schools as Curriculum and Assessment Coordinator since leaving Springfield. Both Judkins and McCusker will begin their new positions on July 1st. The next headline reads, Area Update. 2 area superintendents earn honors from state. This article is based out of Springfield and is written by Nicole LaFond. 2 area superintendents were honored Monday by several state agencies for their leadership and dedication to their school districts. Both Don Owen, D-O-N-O-W-E-N is the last name of Urbana, and Cliff McClure, M-C-C-L-U-R-E, of Paxton, Buckley, Loda, were named a superintendent of distinction at the 3rd Annual Distinguished Administrators Luncheon put on by the Illinois State Board of Education, the Illinois Association of School Administrators, the Illinois Principals Association, and Horace Mann, an insurance company. The program honored 25 superintendents and principals from across the state, specifically those who will play roles in implementing Illinois' new accountability program, which will roll out as part of the Every Student Succeeds Act. The honorees were nominated by community members, teachers, administrators, and board members in their districts, with one administrator from each of the 21 IASA regions saluted during Monday's awards ceremony in Springfield. The next headline reads, Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District First Meeting in City Building Set. This article is written collectively by the News Gazette and is based out of Champaign. Wednesday's meeting of the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Board will be the first one to be held in the Council Chambers at the Champaign City Building located at 102 North Neal Street in Champaign. For several years, monthly meetings had been held at the MTD's Illinois Terminal Building in downtown Champaign. But they're being moved. MTD board members decided 2 months ago so they can be televised on local channels and to give more community members an opportunity to follow along. They will be broadcast live on CGTV, Channel 5 on Comcast, and ITV3, Channel 99 on UVerse, and live streamed on the City of Champaign's website. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of the News Gazette, Part 1, dated for today, Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. We'll resume shortly with Part 2 of the News Gazette. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful day.